Okay, so today the plan is to knock off the last section of Kitisa. Now we've done the first two thirds of the parsha of the Perek Lamed Aleph Chumash and Rashi, and the first third of the Perek with Rishonim. So today I intend on doing the middle third of the Perek of Rishonim, and then the last third of the Perek Chumash Rashi, and maybe Rishonim too. Good? All in the next 25-30 minutes or so. So we'll pick up with Perek the Pasuk. Perek Lamed Dalet. Oh, today is the 20th of July, 2017. The 26th of Tammuz. And we will turn to Pasuk Yud Aleph. Yeah, Pasuk Yud Aleph. So the first 10 psukim was regarding Moshe and that he's now going to go up and he's going to write the new Torah. He hewed out the stones, he's up to Har Sinai, and that's what's going on. Now all of a sudden there's a couple of mitzvahs that are then stuck in. So Pasuk Yidal, Shemor Elecha, Eis Asher Anochi Mitzavcha Ayom, and you need Goresh B'Panach, Asam Riyak Tani, right, watch the things that I command you today, and I'm going to take away from in front of you the Amori, the Knini, the Chiti, the Prizi, the Chivi of Yivusi. Right? So says the Ramban. Ramban says, what's Anochi Mitzavcha Hayom? What is that, the unique idea of being commanded today? Especially because these things that we're mentioning here have, for the most part, been commanded already before. Right? We already have a prohibition of Avodah Zarah. We already have the mitzvos of the Korban Pesach. So says the Ramban, Lo Amar B'chol HaMitzvah Sh'Avra Anochi Mitzavcha, it hasn't said that I command you with other mitzvos, V'alkein Nefari Sh'yomar, Shemor HaMitzvah Sh'Anochi Mitzavcha Ayom, watch the mitzvos that I command you today, and don't do with them that which you did with the previous mitzvos. Because what happened to the previous mitzvos? I command you about this prohibition of Avodah Zarah, and you guys went ahead and made a golden calf. Right? So don't do like that. Rather, you're now going to go ahead and these. Now we're kind of restart, and now we're going to start. What?
Reboot.
Yes, we're going to bring a big red button, and everyone's going to push the button together. Okay. B'yiftiach l'gari sha'amim v'hizir al avodah zarah shelahem v'al brisam kasher asav v'parsha, and he says, if that's the case, I'm going to separate all these other nations in front of you. V'hosif b'kahan el kemasechal k'sulachana. Now, there is one additional mitzvah which we haven't really seen, and that is the idea of molten gods. Molten gods you shall not make, which is exactly what happened with the Chet Egel. Don't put a lot of metals together, specifically gold, and wait for a sheep to come out. Right? Not good. So that's an added mitzvah that is here that hasn't really had before. And then we add in the idea of the three regalim. We add in the idea of the holidays. The roast bahem es pnei adon Hashem Elokei Yisrael. So that you'll see on them the Hashem as kasher asa Hashem v'atam yadua kiva achar asar avodah zaru ukfar pirashtiv besof v'yishma yisrael. As we understand, because it comes after the command of avodah zara. As I explained the end of Parshas Yisrael. So I looked around a little bit at the end of Parshas Yisrael. I didn't see what he was referring to. But the Ramban is at least talking about the idea that at first we have the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, and that leads right into the positive mitzvos of the Shalosh Regalim. So he makes that point. Others on the page talk about that a little bit more. So we'll get to that in a moment. Just I want to knock off the Sforno here. There is a Sforno who says, lest you have a bris with the other people that are living there. So this comes up, those that learn Yehoshua, and Shoftim is more the ramifications of not of making some brises, but Yeshua is all about that, that you shouldn't make a bris. So it says, why not? What's so terrible making a bris with the people that are there, making a pact with the people that are there? Says the Sforno, V'atam she'amartish lo tichros bris liyoshi ba'aretz, hu shin tiye imo bivris tita biglulim al echad mishnei panim. That if you do make a pact with them, you are going to end up you'll sit with them, and then you'll sin with them towards their gods in one of two ways, says the Sforno. Number one, im sheikra chalechol mizivcha, one is you're going to have lunch with them, and lo and behold, that lunch is going to contain their food that was used as a korban to the Avodah Zarah. Right? It might have been double wrapped when presented to the Avodah Zarah, but still it would be a problem of partaking in Avodah Zarah. And the second one, V'im shetasazeh la'avas nashim, that it will be a gateway towards their women, and you'll end up doing Avodah Zarah in order to get their women, as happened by Baal Peor in the previous week's Parsha. So that's though these pacts are not going to lead to a good place, which takes a lot of, as we see today, takes a lot of guts. to say that no, we're not doing it. We're going to claim our supremacy, and may the chips fall where they may. Okay, now the story of this transition. Oh, actually, yeah, the Sforno says, "What is this Elokei Masicha?" Now, the truth is, we did have a commandment not to make idols. Where do we have a commandment not to make idols that we've already had? No, Taselcha, Fasel v'chol tmuna. So Sforno scratches his head and says, how is this different than the previous mitzvah of plus?
Molten.
So you don't think that that's included in the?
Yeah, I mean you're
Olot HaSed, don't make it even if no matter if you create you molt. I think it was there. It might have to look in the Sansino, but yes.
You're asking how is this different than the original don't?
Yeah.
It's more. Specific?
Well, that's what Sam wants to say. How is it? Well, why do you need more something more specific?
Because before he's saying, you know, don't. You could take it generally. Don't walk up to some of these statues or whatever they happen to be, decide that.
Okay. So you're not bothered by this. You think this, or you could just say this is a repetition. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. You could stand, stand strong and say we're just going over. But apparently, B'nai Yisrael needs a little bit of review on some of these avodah zarah details, and let's just review and make sure that these things get settled. You're entitled to that opinion. The Sforno just says something else, but you're fine. I mean, other Rishonim don't comment. It's okay. Really?
Graven images?
Yeah, I think one is carved and one is graven.
But carved versus molten.
Maybe. This Sforno focuses. Maybe yes, maybe not. I don't know. I would think, if you would have asked me, when I heard the Aseret HaDibros, I thought that this all should be included there. Now, the Sforno says that this is a little different, not because of the way of creation. He doesn't focus on the molten, but he rather focuses on.
Not the method of manufacture.
What are you doing, Bruce?
Procedure. Not the procedure, but the method. Where are our of manufacture? All right, anyway, what's this for?
That's fine, but. All right.
I'm sorry,
I'm not upset about that. I'm saying he sent me a text.
I'm sending you a text.
Okay, so lights up. Anyways, the Elokei Masichal Tasulach. So what is the meaning of that? So says the Sforno that Heim Hatalas Maot Hanasos Bishos Yudus. Now it's translated as talisman. Is that like an English word, talisman? Like some kind of
good luck charm.
Good luck charm. So Sforno says that's the problem. That's what's actually being focused on these psukim. Yudus Bechiber Makochav, that they were made at certain times, whenever the stars arrange themselves in a particular way, and those were made by molting things. And the idea was, you put everything together at a specific point, and people will be able to use them to focus on their material needs and their healing and their needs of their body. So these are not necessarily gods, it sounds like. Rather, they are some kind of good luck charm. Okay, so guess what? Remember what we learned about the Chet Egel? We talked about the Egel the first time. Remember the defense, the way of saying that it wasn't so terrible. Oh, they just wanted to replace Moshe, right? What was Moshe for them? That was the issue here.
Yeah, sounds like.
Now, the only problem with that is that then you're mitigating the Chet Egel, right? You're saying that, oh, this is different than before, and therefore the Egel wasn't really prohibited before. Now, truth is, we did make a comment about that. That was kind of how that shear went. And the problem was the other things that took place surrounding the eagle, not necessarily the making of the eagle itself. So it could be that this horn was going within that line of thought. So,
what about the Hamza?
The what?
The hand, you know, that you see this.
Yeah.
No,
yeah, now I can actually do it with my broken finger, actually. Looks.
You want to talk to
it? Yeah.
That's kind of...
There's all sorts
of... I don't know how to say it's prohibited when, like, three-quarters of the Jewish people have them. I don't know what to do with that. I don't even know what they are in order to make a assessment. Yeah. Yes. Superstitious things are bad. You go online as a superstition.
You find everything you want.
Yes. That is true. What? A kameya?
No, the general, like something that's supposed to bring you.
A segula. A segula, yeah.
Isn't a segula the same thing?
Well, no. Segula is hopefully some form of prayer. That's the way we would work it out, that it's a form of tefillah. So there is a friend of mine was put out a couple years ago, and he repeats it every time these things come up, like a list of segulot, and he quotes things from the Gemara, like, you know, how to make sure your child is a Talmud Chacham, learn with them, you know, how to make sure your child earns a lot of money, you know, earns a living, teach him a trade, you know. So, anyways, so this is something else. So Sforno seems to be saying it's not what's being commanded here is not necessarily avodah zarah. So you could truth is you could even say that the chet egel was, but this is the way of avoiding getting to the stage of a chet egel. Right? Anyways, but you could think that this is not necessarily a rebellion against Hashem. We're not worshiping them like a god, but who amnam hepach ritzona. But yet Hashem doesn't want it. It's not something that Hashem wants. Ki chevet shelo yifna avodah la'azer kazula. So Hashem doesn't want you to serve anything other than Him, and as we say, that you should be our, we should be turning to you, not turning towards anyone else. Fine. So now we move on in Pasuk Yud Ches to 18 to the mitzvahs of matzah, right? Eschag matzos, and then we talk about Shavuos, we talk about Sukkos, and this seems to be a bit of an odd place to put them. Why are these here? So, the Or HaChaim, Ibn Ezra also, that both point to the idea that we had just finished mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim, that this opens up with a recollection of, you know, you should serve me, because I'm the one who took you out of Egypt. So, how do we recall Hashem taking us out of Egypt? By recognizing Pesach. Right? And not necessarily Pesach, but all the Shalosh Regalim all have something to do with the Exodus from Egypt. And that's the connection. Now, the Sforno, I think, is saying a little bit more. The Sforno says, Achar Sha'asar Elokei Maseicha, after Hashem prohibited the molten gods, after He said, don't do Avodah Zarah, there have been a lot of don'ts. So far.
Yeah.
So what are the do's? So that's what he's, not D-O apostrophe S, not D-U-E-S. Right? Do's. Okay. So, Achar she'asar elokei mazicha asher bam chashvo sein lahasik ha'yisham. I mean, after Hashem prohibited these molten gods, which people thought would get them chayisha, would get them some amount of sustenance, hisker mitzvos asher mihem yimshechet, Yimshechu mini hatzlachas medumos. So we're now going to list off the mitzvos that are at least recognizing success or will bring you towards success. And the theme of these sections here are the holidays have to do with recognizing, celebrating our success. They all are built around the agricultural calendar, celebrating things that were successful. And he goes on, it's a pretty long story, but he goes through all the different mitzvahs and says how that is Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos, and the Kedushas HaBechor, and the idea of Shemitah. All of these are recognizing Hashem for and thanking Hashem for these things. Not necessarily segulos for the future, but segulos recognition of the past. So if you do these mitzvos, you'll recognize that there is no need to use these molten figures or to go to Avodah Zarah or all these other things. Rather, what should you do? Just recognize the Kodesh Baruch Hu, recognize your connection to Hashem. And you'll be successful in those ways. You'll be successful for those particular things. Yes. Okay. Okay. This section concludes with one that doesn't really fit in very well at all. And I didn't see on the page anybody that really deals with this. But it concludes with the mitzvah of Lusav Hashel Gediva Chalevimo. Don't cook a lamb in its mother's milk. Now, I don't really have a great answer as to why it's there. But they do point out that it is mentioned three times over the course of the Torah. This isn't the first time either. I'm sorry. It was in Mishpatim. It's here, and then it's in Parshas Re'eh, I believe. Maybe Kitetzei. Perek Yudalit and Devarim. I see it's quoted here. But why do you have it three times? So the Gemara says, teach you three prohibitions. You're prohibited to eat it. You're prohibited to cook it, and you're prohibited to benefit from it. Right, so those are the three prohibitions of milk and meat together. So the Sifsei Chachamim points out that that is interesting, but often the prohibition of benefiting, is, you don't need separate psukim. There's plenty of things that we have an iser hana on, that we have a prohibition to benefit from, that are learnt out from the pasuk itself. In fact, if you learn the second parak of Maseches Pesachim, there's about a daf and a half there, two dafim, where it debates what exactly is necessary in order to learn these out. Does it have to say a particular lo yochlu, you should not be eaten, you should not, does it need a specific term or not a specific term? The Gemara actually goes through about 15 different examples and concludes that there's only one practical ramification to that debate. But they are contained, the prohibition of benefiting from is normally contained within the prohibition of eating. So why is here you need a separate prohibition? That's the question that he asks. He explains, Yishlomer Dilagavi Basar V'chalav. By the way, Basar, is it called Basar B'chalav or Basar V'chalav? We ever wonder that? Right, the prohibition of meat and milk, is it called Basar B'chalav or Basar V'chalav? V'h, says Bruce. And you want to take a bit? Okay. So, Basar Bichalav is an Isser Doraisa, Basar Vichalav is an Isser Dorabanan. Meat and milk together, right? If it's contained together.
So together without being cooked. That's
V. That would be and. And if it's meat and milk or meat in milk? That's the way I thought about it.
What if it's not the mother's milk, it's somebody else?
Yeah, so what if it's not a lamb? What if it's a cow? Yeah, so we assume that across the board, meat and milk, those that's learned out of the Gemara, Maseches Chulin. So he explains here, that we're learning here an extra halacha, that if you eat meat and milk together, you are chayiv, you violate the prohibition, even if you don't get hana from it. For example, kagon shenisraf grono ba'achila, if you burn your throat. L'kach l'kasav onami lashon achila, therefore it didn't say the language of achila, she'ichul gam hanah, as we include hanah, ma'she'inkim b'shar achilas asur, meaning this, as opposed to other things that are prohibited to eat. If you eat in an unnatural way, or an unbeneficial way, you do not violate the prohibition. When it comes to meat and milk, though, it says you would. That's his psak. Whether that comes up, practically speaking, I don't know.
But then the double as a secondary reason, isn't it to show also sensitivity to animals?
Okay.
So for example,
when
you don't take an egg, what is it?
You
don't take the egg
from
the mother?
Yeah. So what are you answering?
I'm saying because it says it's mother's milk, there, it's the child.
It brings that about. The only problem is, then you say, okay, well, if it's not the mother's milk, then I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, but I'm saying in addition to the milk and meat, it's okay.
It's hinting towards the reason. That's what you want to say.
Sensitivity.
Okay.
Towards
animals. All right. Maybe. We have other sections in the Torah that do that more pronouncing, but all right. All right. Is it a chok? It depends how you define a chok. There are reasons that are offered, but yes, it is, I think, assumed to be on the ones that we... I didn't say there was a reason. No, you could ask him.
Yeah. You would say it's not a chok. Yes.
I think you don't do it because...
Right, so number one is we do it not because he said not to do it. However, we do have a tradition to try to figure out the philosophical underpinnings of mitzvot as well as we can. So this is one that many people over the years have taken a stab at. No pun intended. All right, so... Let's continue on now towards the end. Let's make a run to the end of the parsha here. So Pasuk Chaf Zayin is really a new section. Pasuk Chaf Zayin 27. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Ksav Lecha Sadri Me'il. You're now going to write these things. So as opposed to the beginning, normally we think of Psalacha. So Psalacha is just ewing the stone. We don't have an indication that Moshe is supposed to write it. Here we actually say Hashem says to Moshe, you write this stuff. Ki Al Pi Hadri Me'il Karasi Itcha Bris Ves Yisrael. Based on these things, I'm creating a bris. I'm creating a pact with the Jews. So it says Rashi, Ksav Lecha Sadri Me'ila, V'lo Ata Rishai Lichtov Torah Shebal Peh. So Rashi sticks in here, you write this and you don't write the Torah Shebal Peh. So that's very nice. Why is Rashi sticking that in here? So it is, the Gemara does say it, but how does that fit into the Pshutil Shemikra? This falls into the Shabbos afternoon shirim that we've been giving about the Medrash. Now why does Rashi feel the need to insert that line here? So Sisei Chacham makes the comment,
He's saying you don't have
Torah Shabbat.
You write that
down
now. Yeah.
Yeah, but is that Pshuto Shemikra? Why does Rashi, what was bothering Rashi that he felt the need to impose that line? So says the Sifsei Chachamim, that even when you brought the Luchos, I'm sorry, I was thinking of the next Rashi. Here it says the Eila Midhu. That's the Sikham. It says that the word Eila is counting to exclude something. So what's it coming to exclude? It's coming to exclude the Torah Shebal Peh. That was the diuk that Rashi made. What does it mean, Ha'ela? Ha'ela mean these things as opposed to other things. So what is the other things that's not supposed to be written down? So Torah Shebal Peh. Right? But I was more thinking about the next pasuk, the next Rashi.
When Hashem said, cue the tablets and I'll write on them, right? Before. Now,
that's true. He did say V'chasavti.
I'm looking at it.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, he says V'chasavti.
Verse 1. It says, and I'll write on the tablets. And now he's telling you, now that you're here, you write.
Since you're in the meeting, you take minutes.
That's the way it always happens, doesn't it?
That's why I try not to go to the meeting. It's way up here.
Originally, he said, you, Moses, cut the tablets out, bring them up here, and I'll write these.
That's right.
And now he's telling Moses, you write on
them. Or at least these things.
Hashem put the outline, and then Moshe Karp.
He put the lines?
Yeah, he put an outline of the letters. Oh, Moshe Karp, he thought.
I believe you.
So then what is he writing now? He's writing all of this. Is he writing all this? All of this?
Okay, I don't know. I can tell you, I don't have a great answer. Other than I see the Rashbam. The Rashbam seems to be addressing this directly. He says, "Oh, write these things." The last 10 psukim. That's what the Rashbam says. Now we talked about the Rashbam.
Last 10 psukim was something that we went over.
Yeah, these things that I just said. Oh, write these things down.
Yeah, yeah.
On your iPad.
Oh. Okay.
So this is
I think that's what the Rashbam seems to say. Yeah. What are you doing with the tablets? I hear the question. I don't have a great answer. I don't. My quick scan of the page doesn't give me a great answer to that question. That's a good. It's a great question.
I could put them in his phone.
Yeah. Okay. So by Yehi Sham Im Hashem Arba'im Yom Ve'Yom Laila, he was there with Hashem for these 40 days, 40 nights. Lachem lo achal, mayim lo shasa. He didn't eat, he didn't drink. By Ktova al Luchos Es Divrei Habris Aseres Hadvarim, and he wrote the Luchos. Sounds like on the Luchos, which is a problem for the Rashbam. Yeah, actually, the Rashbam says by Ktova is referring to Hashem. The Rashbam says, and he was there with Hashem for 40 days, 40 nights. He didn't eat, he didn't drink, and he wrote on the Luchos. Who wrote?
Hashem.
The Rashbam says Hashem.
Well, that's what Hashem said.
Okay, that's what.
Yeah.
But how about the pasuk that we just read?
No, that's talking about this little pact. These 10 psukim that we just said, right. Moshe, you write that down and sign at the bottom because that's our deal. In terms of the Torah itself, Hashem says, I'm writing.
Right.
Now, that's the Rashbam. I don't.
In terms of the stone.
So what about these last 10 psukim? Where are they?
Where are they?
No. Where are they being written? Are they being written?
I said, on an iPad.
How has to be on the scroll.
Moving right and left.
It has great
attention to the whole.
If they're going to be in the Torah, what's the purpose of running?
Because you need to sign at the bottom and say, all right, I'm in.
We always would sort that the second statute.
Yes, I hear.
But this is clearly, I totally...
Well, it's not so clear.
It's he, meaning it's capital.
Yes, okay, the Rashbam says exactly what you're saying based on this text, and he even proves it. The Rashbam even takes a few times and says, "Shekein Amr Lamala v'chasefti al aluchos." Because he said above in Pasuk Aleph that I'm going to write on the luchos.
I agree.
And it also says, "Look in Dvarim Yud Dalet." Rosh says, "Vayichtov al aluchos." They wrote on the luchos. Now, what about the fact that Bruce has complained that we always learned that Moshe wrote it? I don't know.
He complained about that before.
He complained about it in Pasuk Aleph also.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I don't have a great answer. We'll have to look around. Okay.
What side do I fall on?
I fall on that the Rashbam is giving you the simplest explanation, but there are other levels of Torah, and we have to see how they understand the Pesukim. It's for more on the Rashbam, well, you have to come between Mincha Maariv, which we talked all about him last week.
But you think that Moshe wrote it or Hashem wrote it?
What do I think? Who am I? I'm a Pashtun Yid. I'm just reading. I don't know. I can tell you the Rashbam says it.
How can Moses appear to so that you can read and compose songs?
Well, it's the first one. The second one is the memory.
Right. That's the okay. Like there's another medrash that Orach Chaim quotes on the page about Moshe, that Moshe writes it, that Moshe was in the middle of writing it, and he explains the light coming out, that was the extra ink that Moshe had left over at the end, that he used that ink, that touched his far, and that spread out. Yeah. So that's under the assumption that Moshe wrote it. I don't know. I have to work on that. So anyways, he was there 40 days, he didn't eat and drink, and he wrote these luchos, he, meaning Hashem, maybe Moshe, but I don't know. Vayehiva read this Moshe Mi'ar Sinai, and then it was Moshe came down from Mi'ar Sinai. Ushnei luchos haidus biyad Moshe, and the two luchos were in his hand. So here the Rashbam also makes a comment. Kashahevi luchos achronos b'yom hakipurim. That he brought the last luchos on Yom Hakipurim. So here, this is Yechayim Cham also. What's he telling us here? When Moshe came down from Mi'ar Sinai, when he brought down the last luchos on Yom Kippur, he could have said on Yom Kippur. What's he come to teach you? So it says here the Sisei Chachamim. Even though when he brought down the first luchos on Yud Zayin Tammuz, it says also when Moshe came down, and Shnei luchos were in his hands, as it says here. What's the difference? Mikol Makom Kol Hasipurim Habayim Achar Mikrazeh. All the other stories that we're now going to read, such as the light coming out of his face, that's only after the second time around, not after the first time around. Now, that also requires a little understanding. Why only the second time, not the first time? Question. So, Vahibarez, Moshe Mi'ar Sinai, Shnei Luchos, just beyond Moshe. Okay, well, maybe.
His comment about this ink that got on Moshe's face.
Yeah.
So where does ink come from? This is carbon. We're not doing it.
Well, you assume he also, he says he wrote, so what did he wrote? He wrote the Torah.
The Torah wasn't written there. I mean, he didn't write the Torah until much later.
We hold up the Torah, we say, this is the Torah that Moses placed before the children of Israel upon the command of Hashem through Moshe's
hand. Well, he placed it through Moshe's hand. But see, he took his hand and he placed it.
Doesn't mean he wrote it through Moses' hand?
He wrote it as well. If he's coming down with the luchos, he's also going to have sections of the Torah.
Yeah, there's a few different things. There's the luchos and there's the Torah. So what did?
Where's the Torah from down?
Good question. There is, if you look in
luchos.
If you look in the Torah Shlema, I forget if it's Torah. If you go into the library there, there's a very big there's a bookshelf of these things called the Torah Shlema. It's on the top shelf someplace. You don't pick it up too much. There's like a palm tree binding. Rav Menachem Mendel Kasher wrote it. Yikes, we're out of time. But the goal is like a super Torah Tumim, where he gets every possible medrash and he puts it together and tries to work out the text and what the manuscripts are, etc. And then in the back he has these massive essays. So I believe the first essay, I forget if it's in the first volume or in Parshas Yisro, but the first essay deals with this question. What exactly did Moshe come down with? And he quotes two approaches, and then he says, but the bigger question is, why did I have to go to some library to find out people who discuss this? Isn't that like an obvious question that everybody, every child of two should ask? And he kind of shrugs his shoulders and says, well, yeah, but it's really not that important. We'll have to work on that another time. Let's just make a dash towards the end here. So, Vayar Aaron v'chein v'chol b'nei Yisrael es Moshe v'nei Karan or panav. So, Aaron and all b'nei Yisrael saw Moshe, and there was light coming from his face. Vayiru migeshes elav, and they were afraid of coming close to him. So, Vayikra alei Moshe, so Moshe called them. Vayishuv elav Aaron v'chol nesim ha'eda, and they returned to them. Aaron and the nesim. Vayidaber Moshe alei, and Moshe spoke to them. Ba'achri chein nikshu kol b'nei Yisrael, and then once they came, so all the Jews came. And Moshe commanded them all that he said to Har Sinai. Well, he commanded them what he commanded to the Zakenim. So Rashi here quotes the Gemara in Irvin, where it says, well, Moshe repeated four times, first to Aaron, and then to Yeshua, and then to the Zakenim, and then to Bnei Yisrael, and then the Zakenim would take over. That's based on this pasuk. So Moshe concluded from speaking with them. So he placed a veil on himself. And Rashi spent some time here trying to describe this veil. So when Moshe would come to speak to Hashem, he would remove the veil. Why do you need to remove the veil? Hashem could just talk to him. Then he went down and he spoke to the Jews. That which was commanded. And then when the Jews saw him, the light coming out of Moshe, so then Moshe put it back on his face. Why did he wait? Why couldn't he put it on before Bnei Yisrael saw him and said, ah! But put it on before you go in front of the people.
But what happened up there specifically that elevated his status that he should radiate like this? Was it that he wrote the Lukos? Was it that he argued on the sake of God and he succeeded?
So I believe I saw a comment about that, but I don't see it right now. But yeah, I'd say yes. So Moshe put on Avol the Verito until he would go back and speak with him. Who is that? Probably when Hashem would come and speak to him again. Okay, so I've got Parshas Kitisa. I'll pick up on some of these themes and more. Some other time. Have a good day.